I call Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, April 11th, 2025. The time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. Committee members present today, Senator Hughes, Senator Myers, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Senator Giesel. I am the chair. I expect Senator Wilikowski along shortly, as well as Senator Klayman. Senator Kawasaki is excused today. Thank you to Heather and Emma, who are helping us stay organized today. So this is the order with which we're going to address the issues. Thank you. Welcome, Senator Wilikowski. We're going to begin with Senate Bill 114. Then we're going to go to Senate Bill 130, followed by 135. Then we're going to hear the boards and commissions appointees. Then we're going to go through bills in this order, Senate Bill 128, 139, and lastly, SJR 19. So that will be the order. We are going to start out with Senate Bill 128. I'm looking. Is Senator Cronk or his staff present? Ah, there you are. Very nice. Please come forward. All right. So Senate Bill 114 relates to the gas pipeline Fairbanks Spur. We heard this bill on Wednesday. And if you would, let's see, please remind me of your name. I don't have it written here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Paul Mankey, staff to Senator Cronk.
Thank you for being here, Mr. Mankey. We would you like to give us a brief overview of what the bill is? Maybe three sentences.
Absolutely. For the record, Paul Mankey to the Chair, Senator Giesel. Senate Bill 114 hopes to get a spur to Fairbanks for the natural gas pipeline that's hopefully will be built soon.
Very good. Thank you for that. It is a very straightforward bill. We did have public testimony, however, it was left open. I am looking here, and I'm not seeing anyone online that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 114. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. Is there any further discussion from committee members? Seeing none, I will look to Senator Wilikowski for a motion. I think it should be around page six, perhaps. I'm not sure.
Madam Chair, I move to report Senate Bill 114, Work Order 34-LS0683/A out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Legislative legal has the authority to make any necessary technical and conforming changes.
Seeing no objection, the bill will be moved. So please, committee members, please stay after to sign the transmittal documents for Senate Bill 114, Work Order 34-LS0683/A. Very good. All right. The next item on our agenda is Senate Bill 130. Senate Bill 130 is Fisheries Production Development Tax Credit. And this bill has been heard in the past. 130. We do have some amendments on Senate Bill 130 to address today. I'm looking here at amendment number A1. And I believe that's being offered by Senator Wilikowski.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to be offering A.1 at this time.
Okay. Not offered. Amendment number A1 is not offered. That takes me to amendment number A2. Senator Wilikowski, is this yours as well?
Yes, it is. Madam Chair, I would move amendment A.2.
All objects object for purposes of discussion.
Okay, thank you. This amendment clarifies that the number of recipients and amount of tax credits must continue to be reported for each species of fish to ensure the Legislative Finance Division has the data necessary to evaluate the tax credit. When Legislative Finance last evaluated this tax credit in 2021, they found that the tax credit was effective for salmon, but that there was not enough data available to determine whether it was effective for herring. As part of the 2022 bill, the legislature added language requiring disclosure of data for each type of fish in order to allow legislative finance to properly evaluate the program. This bill expands the tax credit from salmon, herring, pollock, sablefish, or black cod to any species of fish or shellfish, which could be interpreted as requiring data be aggregated for only fish and shellfish, not for individual species. And this amendment clarifies that data must be reported separately for each species.
Very good. Is there discussion from committee members? Brief it is. Record. Mr. Lampkin, would you come forward? Welcome. Do you have any comments related to the amendment number A2?
For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. We appreciate the thoughtful consideration this amendment makes, and there's no objection to this.
Very good. Any discussion from committee members? Seeing none, then I will remove my objection to amendment number A2, thereby adopting amendment number A2. With that, we did not have any other amendments. So that brings the bill before us. We have had public testimony previously. I will check again just to make sure. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 130? Seeing no one, and there was no one online to testify either, so public testimony is closed. With that, I will look to Senator Wilikowski for a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to report Senate Bill 130, Work Order 34-LS0735-A, as amended, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Legislative legal has the authority to make any necessary technical and conforming changes.
Seeing no objection, that moves Senate Bill 130, Work Order 34-LS0735-A from committee. Thank you. The next bill up is Senate Bill 135. Senate Bill 135 was also heard, I think, last week, and we do have some amendments to Senate Bill 135. I see amendment number A1 being offered by Senator Hughes. Senator Hughes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment A1.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is after the discussion the other day, although I know AML testified that they would like to have the freedom for the communities to use the tax collected as they might see fit. I understand that, and I would always expect that to be AML's position. We have community revenue sharing on the books for that kind of general thing. This was put forward by the Seafood Industry Task Force to help the fishing industry, so I feel like to follow along that line that we should make sure that it does. Now, I could have gone back and applied it to the whole 60% that the community would receive from this tax, but I chose just to do the 10% and no extra reporting. And also, I did try to make it broad enough so in an inland community that doesn't have a harbor or something that would seem very specific to the commercial fishing industry, that it could be more generally applied. Someone mentioned a road to the airport, so that would be fine. The idea is that it's not being used for a kiddie park or something like that else in the community. If the seafood industry felt this was an important thing to increase the community's support so that they could support the industry, I think we ought to honor what the seafood industry is asking. Commercial fishing has its ups and downs, and it's important they have their support. And you all probably recall, like I do, that the original history was this. It used to be 10% to the communities and 90% to the state. So now we're giving, it was half and half, and now we're going to 60% to the communities and 40% to the state. So the state is in our tight fiscal situation. We're giving up some money, but if it can go to good use and help the seafood industry, let's do it. And so that's what this amendment attempts to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm willing to support this amendment for several reasons. The first is that, thinking back to the commercial fishermen that I grew up with in Cordova, they are always a little bit upset at their own city council that they're not spending enough money on commercial fishing facilities. And so I think they would want me to do this. But perhaps more importantly, two things. One, I think this amendment is written broadly. That is to say, it says, support or enhance commercial fishing. I'm just trying to build public record here. As I'm voting for this, I think that there's a broad interpretation of that. And I'll give you an example. It wasn't directly public funds, but in the early 2000s, Copper River, Cordova Telecom, rather, put up cell towers along close to the flats where most of the gillnet fishery takes place. And those cell towers allowed fishermen to directly sell their fish as they caught them to restaurants in Seattle. And there's more details to it than that, but that's the point. There are many things that maybe we don't think of that in these communities can assist commercial fishing. And so I hope that this amendment is interpreted broadly and gives local communities flexibility. The last thing I'll say is this is a relatively small amount of money because it's 10% of what they receive. So, for example, it would be 10% of 60% as it's written, because it's percent rather than percentage points. So it would be 6% of the total tax revenue received, or 10% of the 60. So for those reasons, I will support the also, I have two other amendments that I think help address AML's concerns. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Is there further discussion about Amendment A1? Seeing none, Mr. Lampkin, I would invite you forward and ask for comments from the sponsor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once again, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens and the Seafood Task Force. Once again, appreciate the thoughtful consideration of this amendment and the forthcoming amendments coming to this bill, and have no objection to them.
Very good. Thank you. In that case, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to Amendment Number A1? Seeing none, Amendment Number A1 is adopted. That takes us to Amendment Number A2. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Amendment Number A2.
I object for purposes of discussion. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is as a result of some of the testimony from AML. It is on page 1, line 9. And granted, this is just intent language, but the current statute says that the money should be used to help maintain and improve municipalities' harbor facilities. We received testimony that not all communities that receive these funds have harbor facilities, so it just makes that clear. If they operate a harbor facility, that is the intent. If not, they can spend it on other things.
Very good. Is there discussion? All right. Seeing none, we've already heard from the bill sponsor's staff that he had no objections to this. I will remove my objection, thereby adopting Amendment A2. Next up, we have Amendment A3. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Amendment A3.
I object for purposes of discussion.
So I will not forgive the committee if you decide this is too complicated and want to reject my amendment. I was working with Legislative Legal, and they wrote this amendment in such a way that I actually don't want this version of the amendment in the law. I would like to do a conceptual amendment to my own amendment, if that is possible, Madam Chair.
Yes, please proceed.
So it's written, a report is not required under this section if 10% of the total tax revenue municipality receives under this provision is less than $1,000. So if you think about that, we could have just said is less than $10,000, because 1,000 is 10% of 10,000, if that makes sense. And so this is because of miscommunication between AML and myself and Lights Legal, and another version should be forthcoming. But I would like to make a conceptual amendment to delete, let's see here, a report is not required under this section if, delete 10% of, so it just now reads, a report is not required under this section if the total tax revenue municipality receives under AS that number, is less than, and then replace 1,000 with 10,000. And may I speak to that, Madam Chair?
Yes, please, Senator Dunbar.
The reason for this amendment, again, goes back to the discussion we had with AML. Some communities receive a very small amount of money from this provision. And for them, writing a report costs more than they might receive. In some cases, we heard as low as $300 they might receive. It takes time and money to write reports. And so I had to choose sort of a relatively arbitrary number. I set it at 10,000. Underneath 10,000 for a, you know, large, for municipality, I felt that that was a small enough amount that it might not be worth it for them to take the money and do the report. So that's what I'm doing. We are alleviating them of their reporting requirement if they receive less than $10,000. And I'll say this is a new reporting requirement in this bill. This reporting requirement, so far as I know, does not exist and will only exist if we pass this piece of legislation.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. So a question relates to lines 14 through 17 of your amendment. Are there alterations in that piece as well?
I would like to make the same alterations there, Madam Chair, removing 10% of and changing 1,000 to 10,000.
All right. Further discussion? I saw Senator Hughes's hand up.
Mine was regarding those lines you mentioned.
Very good. Thank you. Senator Klayman.
So Senator Dunbar, just a question, it actually kind of relates to the First Amendment that we heard as well. As you say, it's not a lot of money, and so the query I have is, I think it's good to have the money, but it makes me wonder about Amendment Number 1. Do we really want to be telling folks you have to spend $100 on fisheries if that's all they're getting? I mean, if I can understand if it was $10,000 that we say spend it on fisheries, but it makes me think back to Amendment 1 and kind of our anti-dedicated funds provisions in the Alaska Constitution that says it all comes in figuring out what to do with it. And so I'm just, this caused me to wonder back on the First Amendment about, are we really trying to give that kind of direct, I know this may not directly relate to this amendment, but that's what I'm wondering.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Senator Klayman, through the chair. I'll say that there is sort of a push and pull with this. I think we want to give our local communities maximum flexibility to use these funds while still ensuring that they are being spent responsibly. And I think you're right that we can't dedicate funds. However, we can provide intent language, and there are a number of – I mean, we already have – I think some of this language already exists in statute where they're supposed to spend this much like alcohol tax, I think, also has some language where they're supposed to be spent on the industry. And so
well, back to the amendment.
Back to the amendment. I think you should pass the amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other discussion related to Amendment Number A3 as amended. Seeing none, I will remove my objection to Amendment Number A3 as amended. That takes us to the end of the amendments. So, Mr. Lampkin, as the staff sponsor, any comments on the three amendments? None. All right. Thank you. Committee members, any other comments about the bill? I am going to open public testimony now. I see no one online who wishes to testify on this bill. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify? Seeing none, I will close public testimony, and I will look to Senator Wilikowski for a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to report Senate Bill 135, Work Order 34-LS0786/A, as amended, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Legislative legal has the authority to make any necessary technical and conforming changes.
Thank you. With that, I see no objection. Senate Bill 135, Work Order 34-LS0786/A, as amended, moves out of this committee. We will sign the documents at the end of the meeting. That brings us now up to the consideration of the governor's appointees for the Big Game Commercial Services Board. So, we have three of those individuals, and I see them there online. Members have in their packet the description of the Big Game Commercial Services Board. I provide it for your information. You'll see on there that all three of these folks are reappointments. The Big Game Services Commercial Services Board consists of 9 members, 8 appointed by the governor, 2 who are licensed registered guide outfitters, 2 who are licensed transporters, 1 who is a member of the Board of Game, chosen by the Board of Game, and who does not hold it's blanked out, but probably a license. I can't read it. It didn't print very well, did it? In any case, the board meets twice a year, and financial disclosure is required, and legislative confirmation is required. So that information is just provided for committee members as we consider each of the appointees. So the first person here on my list is Aaron Bloomquist. Mr. Bloomquist, I see you're calling in from Palmer.
I am, Madam Chair. Can you hear me well?
Yes. So if you would introduce yourself for the record, I suspect you've done this before because you're a reappointment, but tell us why you'd like to continue serving on this board.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Aaron Bloomquist. I live in Palmer. Well, actually, my house is in Wasilla. My P.O. box is in Palmer. I am one of the guide seats on the board, and I'm the current chairman. I have guiding operations in Anwar, Wrangell St. Elias, and on Kodiak Island. I've served on the board a full term, so 4 years, and prior to that, I was active in the board for 20 years, serving on the Anchorage Fishing Game Advisory Committee and the Wasilla or Matsu Advisory Committee, TOC Advisory Committee, and lived in the Copper Basin for a while, too. So I've been around the block a little bit. Honestly, I have some unfinished business on the board. We're working really hard to try to make things run a little bit more efficiently. You know, we finally got good staff that hopefully we can keep. And, you know, it's just a project. It's a volunteer board. I spend hundreds of hours a year, as every chairman does. I certainly can't live up to former Chairman Bunch's, the amount of time and expertise he put into it. But I'd appreciate your consideration. And with that, I'll yield and ask for any questions.
Very good. Members, questions? Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Mr. Bloomquist. I often ask about your perspective of the importance of the independence of the board you serve on, if you could just give your thoughts on that.
Senator Klayman, absolutely. Did you say independence? You were a little quiet there.
Yes. Independence, the notion that it's an independent board that makes its own decisions and doesn't just do what others tell you to do.
Mr. Bloomquist.
Yeah, you know, I think this board has been really very independent since I've been paying attention to it, you know, like close to 20 years. I think that is a testament to the makeup of the board. It's not perfect, but we have a wide range of industry and others on the board. And generally, one of the two guys chairs the board because we have, 90% of our licensees are guides, probably 10% are, don't quote me on that, are transporters, but it's close to something like that. So, but we also have a couple of members of the public that sometimes would have some experience in the guiding or transporting industry, but much of the time don't. And we also have a couple of public landowners that they generally represent ANCSA corporations. Usually there's only one of those seats filled at any given time, but we've just got a great variety and diversity of people on the board. So we do have, you know, occasionally some interest, somebody lobby the board pretty heavily, but it's nothing like you guys face down there. You know, there's generally not a lobbyist in our room, other than occasionally the APHA lobbyists, the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. But yeah, it's a very independent, relatively smoother on the board.
Thank you. Committee members, further questions for Mr. Bloomquist? Senator Hughes.
I just wanted to thank you, Aaron, or Mr. Bloomquist, for stepping up. And I also want to appreciate all you've put, given considerable contributions over time for conservation purposes and also guiding disabled veterans. And I just want to thank you for that service.
All You're right. More than welcome, Senator Hughes. Thank you for all you do also.
All right. I see no further questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Bloomquist, for meeting with us today. Next up, we're going to speak with Martin Boniak. Mr. Boniak, I'm probably mispronouncing your name. I see you're calling in. It looks like from Glen Allen. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm actually sitting in the mail shack at the McCarthy Airport right now.
Well, if you would introduce yourself for the record and tell us why you'd like to continue serving on the Big Game Commercial Services Board.
Okay. My name is Martin Bonick. Live in Glen Elm, have a home here in McCarthy as well. Operate Cockleville Air Services, which is a transporter, which is how I ended up on this board. And we do FAR Part 135 operations in the Copper Basin area from the Canadian border to Elkeetna's from the Alaska Range down to the Sound, including in the fall, hauling lots of hunters. And I think that this is often used to be referred to as the guide board, but the transporters are also licensed by this board. And transporters generally come in two flavors. One is marine transporters, and another is the air taxis. And, of course, my specialty would be with the air taxis, and I think having representation of that on the board is a good thing for the constituents that are air taxi transporters. There's another gentleman on the board who is a marine transporter, so there's two of us that are representing the transporters on the board. And, you know, to be honest, the first couple of years, maybe the whole last term, was a big learning process. I expect the next one to be the same kind of thing. And as we learn, we can contribute more. And if someone else is really dying to do it, I'd be happy to let them. But lacking that, I'm happy to help out where I can.
Thank you very much, Mr. Boniak, for your testimony sharing with us. Any questions from committee members? Yes, Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Boniak, I'm just curious. You're coming from the transporter side. How many air taxis and how many marine transporters do you guys license?
That's a good question. I don't have that number available. I honestly don't know what the totals on those two are.
Okay.
Maybe Aaron's still on and he does. I don't know.
All right. Thank you.
You have to recognize that under both state regulations and federal regulations, a air taxi that's Part 135 operator can carry hunters to and from the field without being a transport. The state regulations require that if they are advertising or charging a different rate than what the normal fare is for a particular flight, then they have to be licensed as a transporter. So you have a number of, I mean, probably lots of air taxis from single pilot operators on up around the state that are hauling as what's called incidental hunting operations as an air taxi under Part 135, since that's regulated at the federal level, not the state level. But if they are transporters, then they are licensed, and that part of their activity is to some extent governed, certain amount of reporting and that kind of thing by the state to this board.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions, Senator Klayman.
Mr. Boniek, a similar question that I asked Mr. Bloomquist, just to get your perspective on the board's ability to operate as an independent entity.
Yeah, I guess I would agree with what Aaron said. There's, I would say it's very independent because, it's, to my observation over the last few years, I've not seen or heard of anything of any kind of outside pressure or pushing for anything. Of course, there's constituents that have certain ideas pro and con on different ideas. There's not really an organization that represents transporters as there is with the Alaska Professional Hunters. And, of course, they have their input on it, as does organizations like the Resident Hunters of Alaska. And there are only a few others. So other than people who are involved in the trade that, you know, testify at public comment, which we welcome because, at least in my opinion, it's valuable to have, not to be making laws and rules and regulations in a vacuum, but to have lots and lots of input to consider from all kinds of constituents, that that information be presented to us. And so we try to have public hearing at most of the meetings, and I wish there was even more of it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Boniek? All right, seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Boniek, for joining us today. With that, we will move on to the third appointee, Keegan McCarthy. Mr. McCarthy, welcome.
Thank you.
If you would identify yourself for the record and let us know why you would like to continue serving on the Big Game Commercial Services Board.
Yes, hello. My name is Keegan McCarthy, and for clarity, I am a new appointee to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. So this is new for me. I've been attending the last few meetings. I've been enjoying that quite a bit, and I'm honored to have been selected to do this. I was raised in Juneau, Alaska. My father was a fish and wildlife biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game the majority of my life. I chose a different path out of high school and became a commercial fisherman and a big game hunting guide. I've done both of those throughout the entire state of Alaska. I've worked as a hunting guide all over the Alaska Peninsula, the interior of Alaska, and then settled back into southeast Alaska when I started my own business in 2005, doing boat-based hunting operations out of Juneau and now Petersburg, Alaska. I'm actually sitting on my boat right outside of Petersburg, Alaska right now, getting ready to host our first clients here soon. So I've been very involved in the industry. I'm very involved in wildlife conservation and different conservation organizations throughout the country and the world. Sat on many boards, had a lot of experience with that. I'm, again, been active with the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. For me, the ethics and the conservation base of hunting is paramount to everything I do, and to be able to help bring some different perspectives and learn and work with this board is very exciting to me, and help perpetuate what the industry that's been built by the people before us. And I thank you guys all for your consideration.
Thank you very much, Mr. McCarthy. Questions from committee members? Senator Klayman.
Thank you. Mr. McCarthy, I see on your form you answered yes to criminal convictions. Can you tell us about the criminal convictions you've experienced and when they were?
Yes, I had a plea agreement in, I'll look back, I think it was 2006 or 2007. It was a DEC violation for having improper permitting for when we were commercial fishing. It was basically, not making excuses, but a big misunderstanding with our processor. There was about 20 of us that had the same violations. That was at a time when salmon prices were at a near historic low, I would imagine, and we were actually harvesting the caviar from the fish, and we didn't realize we needed a special DEC permit at that point in time to be doing it. So that was what the basis of that violation was. That was, I pled guilty to that with the understanding if I was put on probation for 2 years, and then it would be, I believe they called it a suspended sentence. So I did that, completed that, and have never had another big violation since then.
Follow up,
Senator Klayman.
So I think the formal term is a suspended imposition of sentence, and you completed probation, and I think your answer now is that although you had the conviction, you could declare that you haven't been convicted of any crime?
That's my understanding, and I actually called the courts earlier this year when I came up for this, just so I had clarity on how to answer that, and they did tell me that I didn't ever even have to say I was convicted, but I believe in full transparency there was an issue, and we resolved it.
Just a short comment. I appreciate your disclosing it. I think the courts are probably correct. You didn't have to disclose it, but I think the fact you did speaks well for how you've dealt with that, and I appreciate your sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Senator Myers, question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McCarthy, I also uncovered under your name in the court's records something about a failure to seal a bear in a conviction or at least a charge in that regard. Is that you?
Yeah, and I was told that was the equivalent of a parking ticket at the time, so I didn't think it wasn't a misdemeanor, it wasn't that. I didn't go to court. I paid a $100 fine. It was based on solely a confusion. We use Ward Air there in Juneau to ship our bear hides. They pick them up on the boat. They take them to Ward Air. They go in their freezer. Then they go to Alaska Air Cargo and be shipped to us to Anchorage to get sealed and processed. And one of the hides was mistakenly left in the freezer by Ward Air. At that time, as soon as it was discovered, we sent it in, got it sealed. And then subsequently, the state trooper called, actually my guide on record who had written the temp sealing permits and everything and said that, this had been a problem. I volunteered. I said, look, I'm the owner of the business. If there's got to be a ticket, please give it to me, at which time they did. And I paid my $100. Again, when I talked to my attorney, he said it was nothing more than the equivalent of a parking ticket. So I don't know the legal terms for that. I apologize. But so that was that mistake that I took responsibility for.
Senator Myers?
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. To echo Senator Klayman's comment, I appreciate your openness. The last time that I had to ask somebody about a criminal conviction, they were much more defensive, and we ended up rejecting them. I'm much happier to hear your answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Committee members, any further questions for Mr. McCarthy? All right, seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. McCarthy, for joining us today. So those are the three appointees to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. I will ask Senator Wilikowski for a motion now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Senate Resources Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends that the following names be forwarded to the joint session of the Alaska State Legislature for consideration. Big Game Commercial Services Board, Aaron Blomquist, Martin Boniak, and Keegan McCarthy. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against these individuals during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. I did make an error just now. I did not open public testimony. I see no one online who wishes to testify about these appointees. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify related to any of these three appointees? All right, seeing none, public testimony is closed. Thank you for the motion, Senator Wilikowski. And so with that, we will sign the committee paperwork related to those appointees before we leave the meeting today. All right. Next item up is Senate Bill 128. This is the Board of Agriculture bill, which we have heard before. It had an amendment deadline. And we have some amendments. Looks like three amendments. So, The First Amendment, Senator Wilikowski, well, ask my staff to come to the table, but Senator Wilikowski, I know there's lots of pieces of paper.
I'm looking for it.
Yes, I understand. I will have my staff come to the table while you're locating that. You got it? All right. If you would offer the First Amendment.
This is your amendment, Madam Chair.
Correct.
I would offer Amendment N.2.
And with that, I will object for purposes of discussion. So my staff is at the table, and Mr. Harbison, if you would explain Amendment number 2, N.2.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Intamayo Harbison, staff to Senator Giesel. Amendment N2 would create within the Department of Agriculture a new division of mariculture to focus on mariculture issues in the state.
Thank you. Discussion. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I seem to remember that when we were discussing the bill previously that mariculture was brought up, but it's currently under, I believe, Fish and Game. Would this amendment create a new division or move that division over from department to department?
The intention is that it would move it over. Mr. Harbison?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, for the record, Intamayo Harbison. It is my understanding that this would move the Division of Mariculture to the Department of Agriculture. That was the intent when we requested this from Legislative Legal.
Okay. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank you for using the term mariculture instead of aquatic farm. It might come up somewhere else. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hughes.
So we recently had a discussion and added mariculture to the definition of seafood, I think, for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. So I'm wondering how this might fit with that.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, we are not currently recommending to move the duties of ASME to the division, the proposed Department of Agriculture. It was felt that ASME would better fit within DCCED still, since they are primarily promoting Alaska seafood. If they were to be promoting mariculture as well, we feel that that still fits within DCCED, not with the specific growing of the mariculture product.
Okay.
Follow-up, Senator Hughes.
Thank you. Would the mariculture products be eligible for the Alaska-grown label, and could it be part of that?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I would imagine that it would be. I believe currently that decision would be left up to the proposed Department of Agriculture, so that if they did feel that that was appropriate, then yes, I believe that the Alaska Grown label could be applied to proposed mariculture products.
Okay, thank you.
Further discussion? All right, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to amendment number N2? Seeing none, amendment number N2 is adopted. Senator Wilikowski, amendment number N3.
Chair, I would move amendment N.3.
And I'll object for purposes of a discussion. Mr. Harbison.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Through the chair again for the record, Intamayo Harbison. Amendment N.3 would create within the proposed Department of Agriculture a new division of food security. There was some conversation when the executive order related to the Department of Agriculture came up that this body wanted to have a specific focus on food security, so we feel that putting that within the Department of Agriculture would be an appropriate place for that to fit.
Discussion. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support the amendment, but I do want to sort of build the record around a little bit around food security. I don't think there is, as of yet, a legal definition of food security in our law. And I'll say that I define food security perhaps more broadly than some do. If folks have a chance to read the work of Amartya Sen, who is a Nobel Prize-winning economist who's written a lot about famine, it's interesting that famines are driven primarily not by a lack of food supply in countries, but by a lack of income. That is, during the potato famine in Ireland, for example, they were still exporting potatoes. The first people to starve in most famines are not actually farmers. They're people like barbers that run out of income and can't purchase the food that is available. It's mostly a distribution issue within a society, not an absolute lack of food. And so insofar as we are creating a division of food security, I hope that we understand that that means programs like EBT and SNAP, the programs that provide income for folks to purchase food is an individual and family aspect of food security that is often more important than things like growing or importing food. Because the food exists, it's just not distributed appropriately. So again, I support the creation of a division of food security, and I hope that they are focused not just on questions of, you know, how much food we grow, but also how food is distributed and how people afford food in our rural areas and in our lower income areas through programs like food assistance. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that input, Senator Dunbar. That was very worthy. Senator Hughes.
Yeah, I agree. It was really interesting as far as the distribution. So just a question that tags along with that. There's no intention right now to move SNAP or anything. I'm not sure where those exist, whether that's Department of Health or Department of Family and whatever the rest of the name of that department is. So I'm assuming that would not move those things. But my question is, I'm just concerned that I don't want a fiscal note that is going to trip this up. So I notice that we have the Commissioners to Control and Supervise the Division of Food Security. While we're in not the best fiscal situation that we could be in, would it be possible for this to be set up and be part of the department, but just have the commissioner's office take care of it initially, or do you envision there being a fiscal note attached to this division?
Mr. Harbison.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes. So the way that we've asked for this amendment to be drafted is broad enough that it creates a division, but not so prescriptive that we are telling the new department what they have to do with that division. So if it was the will of the commissioner to take on the duties of the proposed division of food security, that would certainly be within their purview. The way that this amendment is currently written, I do not believe that it would inherently have a fiscal note unless that was something that the new department wanted.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. The public assistance that you were referring to, you were wondering about food stamps, et cetera, is in the Department of Health under the Division of Public Assistance.
Okay.
So it's already in a department. There is already a fiscal note to this bill. So another question. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A little less question, a little more or comment. I'll be supporting the amendment, but I'm a little tentative about this because, as was already mentioned, the term food security is very broad. You know, EBT, things like that, that's one aspect that could get rolled into here. You know, with my background, of course, my immediate thought is transportation. you know, whether that means the barge is coming up, okay, how does this involve the Port of Alaska or potentially other you know, major ports around the state, you know, the Alcan. There was a major blockage on the Alcan from a landslide about 10 years ago or so that kept us from getting fresh produce for a couple weeks. You know, some things like that. I wonder about other pieces that the term food security is just so broad that it can reach into so many departments. And I see some value in terms of splitting out departments and getting some independence, but to come under one term, sometimes there would be so many different pieces affected that I want to he- I
like I said, I'm going to support the amendment because I support the concept, but I'm going to be watching the process as the bill moves forward to see exactly how that gets implemented along the way.
Thank you, Senator Myers. You know, one of the reasons for the Department of Agriculture concept to begin with was that there wasn't enough focus on the food security aspect of our state. So you're right. We're blazing new trails here. It does cross a lot of lanes. We've already talked about the Department of Health. But this, the intent of this is that there would be actually a agency that would focus, maybe bring in input from other departments. There should be more collaboration versus silos, and really improve the whole concept of food security as broadly as it's intended. Senator Myers.
Yeah, just one other. I forgot one other area. There was a lot of interest over the last about year and a half about a potential merger between Kroger and Albertsons, and that could have had a potential – if that had gone through, that could have had a potential impact on food security in a number of places around the state as well. In terms of prices and availability and the like, and if I remember right, that was stopped at the federal government level. You know, that I believe that's comes with the Department of Commerce here at the state level, if I remember right. And so again, that's another area that we're reaching into, and so it gives me a smidge of pause, given how broad it could be.
Thank you, Senator Myers. Senator Hughes.
I would just say the pause that Senator Myers, it's making me recognize actually the need for this because being intimately involved for a couple of years on the task force, it was a huge amount of time and effort and discussion and recommendations related to the distribution, the transportation, and that is actually one of the hang-ups. So I think actually having a place where that can be housed and be worked out, you would be working with other departments naturally, but it was maybe as much as one-third of our discussion. It was a really big part. In fact, the AWOS, the Aviation Weather Observation Systems, it would seem strange that the task force was making that a priority, but that had to do with the distribution of food to the rural communities. So I think actually this is needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Further discussion? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection, thereby adopting Amendment Number N3. Senator Wilkowski, the next amendment is N7.
Madam Chair, I'd move Amendment Number N.7.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Mr. Harbison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, into my Harbison, staff to Senator Giesel. Amendment N.7 is an attempt to define the duties of the commissioner within the proposed Department of Agriculture. As has been stated in this committee and previous committees, there's been some concern about increased fiscal note costs of creating additional divisions within the department. So what this amendment would simply do is to explicitly state what the duties of the commissioner are, that they have to support and improve food security for residents, that they have to support agricultural businesses in the state, that they have to support mariculture businesses in the state, that they have to support and engage in agriculture and mariculture research with stakeholders in the state. And that they also would have to, by February 1st of each year, provide a report to the Alaska legislature detailing what improvements they have made in those listed areas.
Is there discussion? Senator Hughes.
Yes. So last night, actually, at the Food and Farm Caucus, we had Director Brian Scoresby with the division, and I asked a question on the research front. So in engaging with research that University of Alaska is, that is, you know, their mission. They have a, under Jody Anderson, that is their work. And so really it's more coordination. The Plant Material Center does do some research, but I just want to make it clear that that's really the university's role. And I think it would be the commissioner of the department's role to make sure that research and best practices gets out to the ag producers. So I'm just wondering, does your duties there say the department has to conduct the research itself, or is it more working with the university to get the word out?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, the language within the amendment is simply to support research. So, again, we're leaving it very broad for the proposed department. If they feel that that support means grants, if they feel support means, helping disseminate information, that would be the prerogative of the proposed department. But we are not specifically saying that they have to be involved in research in any way.
Thank you.
Very good. Further discussion? All right. With that, I will remove my objection, thereby adopting amendment number N7. All right. With that, we are back to the original bill as amended. We've had public testimony. I did leave public testimony open, so I'm going to look now to see. I see one person online who wishes to testify, Mr. Leonardo Wasili, calling in from Nenana. Mr. Wasili, can you hear us?
Hello.
Hello. So I'm opening public testimony to hear from you. If you would introduce yourself for the record with your name and any affiliation, and you have 2 minutes to testify.
Yes, my name is Leonardo Wasili. I currently live in Nenana, Alaska. I sit on the National Family Farm Coalition Executive Committee. I work for the Nenana Native Association, the local tribe here in Nenana. I also work at Eclipse Farm, training about ecology and beginning farming. And so, generally, I support, any movement towards strengthening food security in Alaska. I believe that the process should be a little more involved through the legislature and rather than by order. But I support growing food here locally by people who live here and are managed by people who live here. Kind of similar to different agricultural, standards in other industries, that give us that protection for local communities and ensuring our communities are safe and free from chemicals and things like that, but also, that we are able to grow food here locally and we have, a lot of growing support around, both the state and, nationwide around the practices of, regenerative farming where we really focus on, building healthy soil, and healthy soils are healthy for our entire ecosystems, where fish can thrive, our people can thrive, and our communities can thrive. And so I really appreciate you taking the time to testimony and look forward to both participating and learning more in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Wasili. So with that, I'm going to set Senate Bill 128 aside, and we'll take it up again later at another hearing. That brings us to Senate Bill 139. This is land ownership restrictions, agriculture land, brought to us by Senator Hughes. Senator Hughes, I would invite you to introduce the bill along with your staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Shelley Hughes, Senator for District M, Palmer, and I'll allow my legislative intern, which I might say we are very excited as this is his first opportunity before a committee. He told me he's not nervous, but be gentle on him. So,
of course. Welcome. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Joel Mutz, and I'm student legislative intern to Senator Hughes.
Very good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know our time is short, so I'll be really brief. Sometimes we introduce bills to fix problems, and sometimes we introduce bills to prevent problems. This is the second. In the lower 48, foreign countries have purchased about 40 million acres of ag land, and of that, the most recent number for China is 384,000 acres, which maybe isn't on the grand scale of thing a lot, but it would, depending where it's located, it could be detrimental to the U.S., and that represents about half of what we have in production here. So this bill does three things. First, it prohibits the citizens of our foreign adversaries, and there are six, and you'll see them in the presentation. They're based on the U.S. code. It would prevent them from owning ag land, acquiring land, and also from being within 100 miles of military installations, and also for companies from owned or controlled by foreign adversaries for having access to critical infrastructure or cybersecurity related to that infrastructure. And so this is really, I'll just read the bottom line of my sponsor statement, to ensure that our military installations remain secure and pervious, our agricultural lands remain productive and unassailable, and our communities remain strong and safe. And with that, we have a brief presentation that Tool was going to present with your permission.
Very good. I will let you proceed.
Thank you. For the record, again, my name is Joel Mutz, a student senator to Senator Hughes. First slide on the bills say restrictions on foreign adversary regarding military installations and agricultural lands in Alaska. This slide says these bills would prohibit the state or the country that are designated by the U.S. Secretary of Commerce under the Section 15 CFR 797.4, which is a determination code to designate a country as a foreign adversary. And currently, there is six countries that are in this list, and number one is China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, Cuba, and Venezuela. This list would also prevent the citizen from this country from owning a piece of land in the state of Alaska or anywhere in Alaska. It does not affect the citizen from this country who are also a United States citizen. Our second slide on this presentation, we have provisions of the imposement. How is this bill is going to be imposed? Well, there is a four steps in the provision of this bill. The first step of this imposement is that a report is made to the Attorney General, a warranted Attorney General. The second step to that is that he or she will conduct a proper and thorough investigation. And the third step to that is when evidence is found that this bill is violated, he or she will seize the land and sell the lands. And the fourth step to that is that a land is sold and the funds that's generated from the land is returned to the landowner, and the remaining part of the funds is put into the general funds. Our third slide to do was balancing of the restriction and fairness. We have four categories in this part. U.S. citizens, as I say in the in the second slide are exempt from these restrictions. It does not also affect the residential lease. That would also mean a foreign citizen from the country that I mentioned earlier are allowed to lease land or a residential in our state. And a pre-existing lease before this bill came into effect on July the 1st, 2025, can be allowed during these terms. And the pause is mortgages, and the pause for future can still remain in the lease, at the lease stage. Why is SB 139 important? Well, currently we have a lot of tension that is going around our country, and part of that is also because we don't want to see what happens in other states happening here in the state of Alaska, because currently there is over 45 million acres that is owned, which is a foreign our lands, agricultural lands, that is owned by the foreign country, which are also a foreign adversary, to be specific, and we don't want to see that happening in the state of Alaska.
I just want to correct that, if I may, or just clarify. The 45 million is not all owned by foreign adversaries. There are a lot of nations, so Canada does, for instance, a lot of business here. So we don't have the number for those six countries, but we do have information. And I'll just say I gave an updated number on Chinese ownership. It's 384.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Charles, again, student senator to Senator Hughes. Why is SB 139 necessary for our national security? First, there are four cases why this bill needs to be implemented or why it's important. Chinese firms own land or a firm investment that's owned by Chinese power holding in the U.S. Naval bases, and that is located within 1 mile of the state of Oregon to the military base in the state of Oregon. And we also have a Chinese firm in North Dakota that's also located within about 12 miles from the military side. And the third one is a Chinese firm that is also holding a crypto mining operations in the state of Wyoming, and that's also located within the miles of the military, of the Warren Air Force Base. And we also have the same thing in Michigan. A Chinese electric battery plant is also located in 100 of the U.S. National Guard base, and that is also for training, a joint base of training between the U.S. military and the Taiwanese military. Why is SB 139 important, or why do we need this? Well, there is a lot of cases that is why we need this bill. As we see, the problem that we face is not only to the military installation, it also affects the civilian infrastructure, as we see from this this graph. In 2019, a Chinese and Russian hacker infiltrated America's electrical grids and installed a malware. And the same case happened in 2010, when Russian hacked a Nasdaq stock with a digital boom that also damaged the financial networks. And in 2013, Iranian hackers also infiltrated a control system of the Bowman Avenue Dam in New York that also resulted to almost flooding the entire town. In 2022, a Russian hacker attacked a food company which also temporarily close meatpacking plants in the U.S. In 2023, just recently, a China X and network balls in Tycoon access Guam, a critical infrastructure. Purpose of the foreign protection. This is important to safeguard our agricultural lands for local use and our domestic food supplies. It also prevents opportunity for gathering intelligence near military bases. It also has to do with geopolitical protections amid global tension, both to national security, economic security, and also food security. With your support and your help, at the state of Alaska legislature, you can do your small part to ensure that at the state of Alaska, for the foreign homes or the foreign country does not own a land in the state of Alaska. And, Madam Chair, thank you.
All right, continuing on with slide 8. Oh, you were done?
Yes. Yeah.
All right, very good.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to brag on my legislative intern just for a second. Chul Moot was born in Nairobi, Kenya, and schooled in England, and came over here without family at age 19, has managed to buy a house, and is going to be graduating soon from the university. And I'm very happy to have had him on board. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I see online, first of all, I see you have invited testimony of Wes Ward. He is the Secretary of Agriculture in the state of Arkansas. Secretary Ward, can you hear us?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you for joining us. I invite you to introduce yourself and give us your testimony related to this bill.
Great. Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate that. My name is Wes Ward, and I'm the Secretary of Agriculture in Arkansas, and just appreciate the opportunity to provide a few brief comments. And before I start, though, I will just mention the appreciation that we have for Alaska. One, we participate in the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, and they usually put us in alphabetical order, so we're usually pretty close to Alaska and get to have several good conversations with Director Scoresby, and I just appreciate everything that y'all got going on in Alaska. And then separately, our senior senator from Arkansas, Senator John Bozeman, who's chair of the Senate Ag Committee, recently made a trip up to Alaska, and he visited with him about that. He very much enjoyed his time in Alaska, just appreciated the hospitality there. Speaking today just specifically on the foreign ownership piece, that's been something that we have spent quite a bit of time working on in Arkansas. Our governor, Governor Sanders, was the first governor to kick a Chinese-owned agricultural land off of land in Arkansas. We had a bill that passed in 2023 to further restrict foreign ownership. Listen to the testimony about China and foreign ownership. Our law in Arkansas was somewhat similar. We've got about 1.6 million acres of foreign-owned land in the state, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. We've got good relationships with Canada. They've got quite a sizable amount of forest land in Arkansas. But the bill and the intent of the legislature that had overwhelming bipartisan support was to restrict ownership by countries that are adversarial to the United States. And so there's a list of those countries. It's the countries that you would imagine: China, Iran, North Korea, those places, Russia. And so it restricted that. And during the process of our research and analysis, we figured out that China owned about 160 acres of farmland in northeast Arkansas. And so Governor Sanders took pretty quick action to kick them off of that land, had to pay a fine as well. That was 2023. We're in a legislative session right now in Arkansas as well. We've came back to further refine that. I know that that bill has a critical infrastructure as part of the bill that y'all are considering. Arkansas did the same thing during this legislative session, just making sure that we're protecting critical infrastructure that exists from across the state on a broad range of factors to protect that, the national security aspect. There's a lot of agricultural concerns. There's the national security concerns, and certainly countries that are adversarial to the United States. We wanted to make sure that we were protecting our interest across several different sectors. So I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak, even if briefly. Happy to answer questions, but just appreciate what y'all are doing, and happy to support in any way that we can from Arkansas.
Thank you very much, Secretary Ward. Any questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next up, we have Representative Kendall Culp, Representative, Indiana House of Representatives. Do I have that correct?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, there we are. Good. Yes, Representative Culp.
Yes, thank you very much. We did get a call. Our State Department of Agriculture got a call and referred it to me. I'm the author of a House bill last year, which passed overwhelmingly to limit the foreign adversaries from coming into Indiana. And ours was specifically started out as protecting farmland. We do have some foreign ownership of farmland, not a lot in Indiana, but we want to keep it that way. Again, so ours was more about food security and to protect our food supply. Those same countries that you heard from the other speakers, those same six adversarial countries are the ones that are limited. It passed out of the House unanimously to start with, went to the Senate, and I sent it to the Senate Agriculture Chairwoman, and she wanted to make it even more protective, and so we decided we wanted to protect some of our military installations. And we didn't get as far as we wanted to, but we had a lot of National Guard armories and National Guard maintenance facilities in Indiana. But what we did was we put a 10-mile ring around one of those, and those are there's 90-some facilities in our state. And so in that case, they would not be allowed to purchase any sort of real estate in that. Now, we have a National Guard armory on the edge of Indianapolis, our capital. And so all of Indianapolis is protected because of that 10-mile ring of any ownership from any of those six countries. So we're really proud of that. It was a very highly publicized piece of legislation. And now we did have some concerns. We do have a lot of agribusiness in Indiana. Corteva is headquartered in Indianapolis. Smithfield, of course, owns a good deal of the swine in the United States. They don't have any plants per se. They do have a couple packaging plants, however. And so we made sure that we started at zero tolerance and we went to 5%. And what we found out is these publicly traded companies like Corteva, for example, they really don't know who all owns stock. And so we ended up, and to get this through, we just said that everybody, if you're an adversarial country, you cannot have a majority ownership in any industry or any company or any corporation in our state. And so that's how we ended up and got this passed. There was an attempt this year to maybe make it stronger by another individual to put a registration piece in. I'll probably come back next year and try to beef up our language a little bit stronger. Our attorney general is the one that really has oversight of this. In looking at your legislation, our law looks very similar to what you have and what you're proposing here. So, we can't be too cautious. But we did also protect water rights, mineral rights, and riparian rights. And it was owning and or leasing, and whether that's land, whether that's coming in and trying to put renewable energy in, or whatever that case may be. If you're one of those six adversarial countries, you cannot have majority ownership in any of those projects. So. Happy to answer any questions if you do have any, but it's been very well received in Indiana, and our farmers specifically, we're a very strong agriculture state. Our farmers certainly appreciate that protection.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Culp. Any questions for Representative Culp? Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Now we have Representative Scott Sharp from the Kentucky State House of Representatives. Representative Sharp, welcome.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight or this afternoon, Alaska time. We got a bill passed in the Kentucky General Assembly this past year, House Bill 315. And in a nutshell, it does pretty much what the previous two speakers have said. The only difference really is that we linked our hostile forces or hostile countries to the ones identified in Title 22 of the Code of Federal Regulations, Section 126, which lists eight adversaries, Belarus, Burma, China, Cuba, Iran, North Korea, Syria, and Venezuela. And we did that because it specifically, I think if things change, those countries will come on and off this section here. So we don't have to go pass another law about that. And, you know, and we need to tighten some things up with our bill, and we're hoping to do that next year.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Sharp. We appreciate you sharing your information and testifying tonight. Thank you. With that, that ends the invited testimony. I'm going to open public testimony. I have one person online. His name is David Crum, calling in from Big Lake. Mr. Crum, welcome to the committee. This is public testimony. I will be limiting it to 2 minutes. Welcome, if you would give your name, affiliation, and your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is David Crum, and I do live in Big Lake. I am the former Alaska Command Commander, along with Air Force Commander, a couple of years ago, and I'm here to make my recommendation that this bill be considered and pass. And I thank these representatives for paying attention to this issue, and I'd be remiss if I didn't congratulate that young man who works for Senator Hughes, and he is absolutely an inspiration. But, you know, in the world we live in today, I'm going to talk specifically to national security. Our adversaries are intent on spying and intervening in any potential operations that we might conduct against them. I know that this committee understands the Billinger quote that he who controls Alaska controls the world, and Alaska is a central place for some of our world's most intensive operations. We can get to them anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere. We have our nation's most sophisticated equipment and the world's best trained military up here. In the event of a crisis, our military base here in Alaska would be a key provider. And if our adversaries have the potential to locate near and around our military bases or the places we train, they could potentially impede those forces or those logistics. So I would like to recommend this committee pass this. I would also recommend that in future, we would look at securing the areas in and around our military operations, including underneath the airspace where our very, very advanced fighters and bombers fly. So to your questions, Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to testify and open to any questions you might have.
Thank you so much, Mr. Crum, for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Crum? Seeing none, I appreciate your comments, particularly as I chair the Special Committee on Arctic Affairs, and we are very strategically located here in Alaska. So with that, is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Senator Schauer, I welcome you to the committee. I am limiting public testimony to 2 minutes, please.
Understand. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Appreciate the chance to come before your committee. I want to highlight as well the previous testifier. There was actually Lieutenant General Crum. He is a highly experienced senior officer, so just so that it's aware or that you're aware, he has been all over the world, and I've known him for about 35 years. So you were hearing from someone that has been at the highest levels of the Pentagon, including a SecDef senior military aide. So just I would just suggest take his advice as intended, because he definitely knows what he's talking about. And I think I wanted to highlight one thing here, Madam Chair. You said it. We're strategically located, very important here in this state. And I think maybe the most important thing to consider is that there are countries out there that are looking to do what we would call asymmetric warfare. They're not looking to have head-to-head conflict with the United States, and we could think of the countries that were listed in the briefing. That being said, one of the ways they do that is without direct conflict. They will buy land. They will push drugs across the border. They will look to get themselves into big projects like, say, an Alaska pipeline from a few years ago. And you may have seen, I think we all did, that, for example, our governor just received a letter that was pretty strong from China. And they do not want us in their business. But you'll notice they have no business. They have no problem stepping into our business, for example, trying to buy their way in with the $43 billion loan. So it is very important that we understand that we are dealing with countries that will take any measure, they will do anything, but it's not as direct as people will see. It'll be very subversive. And the last thing I will say about that, because I do agree with Lieutenant General Crum, this is a very important bill. We need to make sure that we are not going to put ourselves at risk and our strategic location and our resources. But as you look at this bill, it is not just the space around military organizations, post, et cetera, as well as farmland. But one thing we should consider is the land underneath it. So you may wish to expand it, Madam Chair, or at least consider amendments, because there's two parts to it, and I will be done. I'll finish this real quick for you, is that underneath that airspace, there's a lot of exercises taking place, so you want to consider that. It's not just the land around the bases, because they can see and operate and know what we're doing and take notes on that. And the second thing is, on the second page, you may notice that there's a thing about dwellings. It's not just that. They are known for buying dwellings and businesses where they can host their people and look at things. So I would just suggest you might want to look at some amendments, and I appreciate the extra time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. With that, I will leave public testimony open so that we can hear from additional folks. At this time, I'm going to set Senate Bill 139 aside for future hearings. Thank you for bringing that forward, Senator Hughes. Lastly, we have Senate Joint Resolution 19. This is ANWR and National Petroleum Reserve State Share. I invite forward the bill sponsor, Senator Jesse Bjorkman, and his staff, Laura Ashi. Welcome, Senator Bjorkman. It's been a long week.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to members of the esteemed Senate Resources Committee. My name is Jesse Bjorkman, and I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. The measure before you, SJR 19, is intended to restore Alaska's birthright of a 90% royalty share to all of our resources that are developed on federal lands. President Trump's executive order unleashing Alaska's extraordinary resource potential was welcomed by many Alaskans who wish to maximize the benefit of our oil and gas and mining resources for the sake of our economy and our culture here in Alaska. However, because of the limited royalty revenue that we receive as a state from federal land, the benefits that our state can receive due to that expansion of development is limited. And we certainly have many challenges that we all are familiar with. But to provide a bit of history, the reason why the Alaska Statehood Act included a 90% share of our royalty resources was so that Alaska would not be a pauper state, so that Alaska would not be dependent upon the federal government to meet its infrastructure needs and its basic government service needs, so that we could do that on our own. And in exchange for taking on that responsibility as a state, we were to have that 90% share. However, Congress has gone back on its word and decided that for federal lands in ANWR and a few other instances, that they would not honor that 90% royalty split. This is problematic. And it's my strong belief that the federal government should recognize that 90% royalty share that we should have, and this resolution encourages Congress to take that action, Madam Chair.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Committee members, any questions for Senator Bjorkman? Senator Hughes.
I'll just make a comment. I was actually thinking of filing something similar. I'm grateful Senator Bjorkman brought it forward, and thank him from continuing to carry the banner that former Governor Wally Hickel worked on back in the day. And I think this is important, especially, Madam Chair, when you think I've looked a little bit at federal land ownership in other states. Other states, New York is one where less than 1% of the state is owned by the federal government. And considering, I think we're at the 60-65% federal land ownership. This is the least that a Congress could do, and it's the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Any further comments on the resolution today? All right, seeing none, thank you for bringing it forward, Senator Bjorkman. I will be we're going to set it aside right now. We will schedule it for Monday and invite you back to discuss the resolution further. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
With that, that brings us to the end of our meeting today. The next meeting will be Monday, April 11th at 3:30. On the agenda will be HJR 11, which recognizes the Alaska-Canadian relationship. That will be also Senate Joint Resolution 19, which you just heard, ANWR National Petroleum Reserve State Share, Senate Bill 139, Land Ownership Restrictions, Ag Land, and lastly, Senate Joint Resolution 18, Wildfire Preparedness. So this meeting will stand adjourned at this time. Let the record reflect that the time is 5 p.m. Members, please stay to sign the transmittal documents for bills and governor's appointees.